This is Hustle, a podcast about digital product design. I'm Rick Messer, your co-host with Anthony Armendariz, owner of Funsize, a digital product design studio in Austin.
Hi.
Hey, what's up?
What's up?
It's good to be back doing this.
It's been about
a month.
I think we took about a month off.
Yeah.
didn't have a plan to do that specifically, but things got a little crazy with, we're moving.
So yeah.
I think that was a big part of it.
Onboarding new folks and moving. Mm-hmm. Been quite busy.
Yeah. Things have been good. We had discussed potentially just kind of going into, we had a conversation going based on an article that came out about a month ago, which was written by this guy from Us Too, Jules Earhart. Earhart. I don't know how to say it exactly, but at any rate, this was published on the Marvel app blog, and the article is called State of the Digital Nation 2016. Kind of got me thinking about some really, man, somewhat profound things, just the concept of where, basically how products are being built today and what that means for a designer. What it means to be a designer today is a far cry from what it meant to be a designer 20 years ago and any time before that. I would actually definitely say, even more so the last 10 years. Because basically, the thing that sort of caught my eye with as I'm reading this article, it's talking about this is where digital design is. This is how companies are functioning. This is how big major brands are purchasing product design companies. and the reason behind that is that the previous way that design agencies had worked weren't, is sort of a thing of the past. I'll get into what I mean more about that. But specifically, the thing that's kind of blowing my mind is that I realized that, I started like professionally, I think, in like 2005. And until I feel like maybe the iPhone came out in 2007. Until then, I feel like a designer's job was advertising, basically. Like when you boil it down, it's like marketing or advertising in some form or fashion. And that's really the only thing that it is. Now, ever since, I'm not saying it's solely because of the iPhone. I'm just sort of...
Also web SaaS products.
Yeah, you know, that's true. I feel like whether, I'm just sort of thinking of that year as like a big paradigm shift, because essentially products were created primarily, with executives and business people, product people, and then they would sort of delegate, the requirements to engineering, which would be built, and design was typically an afterthought. There's basically like libraries they could choose from of previously designed GUI interfaces that some designer somewhere. I want to meet somebody who designed like one of these, UIs like from back in the day. that design was definitely an afterthought. Maybe not UX exactly, but until very recently, designers' jobs have been only advertising, but now it's product design. We are sort of empowered and given a seat at the table, as it were, to build products and participate in what should be built. So that was kind of the thing. One of the main things that I was sort of taken away from it was like, oh my gosh, like I never realized this before. But it's our job has always been advertising a product. But now our job is to actually build the product.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some advertising as well.
Yeah, it's I remember going through that transition too, because my background was designing marketing websites and like publishing websites.
Yeah.
And I remember when all of a sudden our studio, the agency that I work for, Behavior Design in New York, all of a sudden all the work was all software.
Mm.
Like all of a sudden I had to like learn how to design like an Ajax, mm-hmm. experience. Like, and it's, I guess that's when it really hit me, like, oh, I actually have to understand this. Like, it's not just styling. It's like, it's actually how it works.
Yeah.
And that was a very big shift.
Yeah, I think, you know, stuff from the early days, software from the early days, you know, at some point people realized that, hey, we want to make it easy for people to use these things. So let's put someone in charge of that. And it's not like old products that we built were bad. It's just that we had never, as a human race, had never like, you know, moved something that was a physical product that we were trying to mass produce and sell into like a digital experience. So it's just simply that there were no rules, I think. And we have a lot of rules, and we can identify, and even, you know, most end users can identify what like bad design is or bad user experience is. But that just simply didn't exist before. And so now it's sort of like everybody has consumed so much of it that we're starting to get picky. And I think that's what has sort of elevated design to having a seat at the table for, you know, executives and whatnot to appoint head of design to their product and kind of run their company with that way. And letting design be a strong pull in different directions. So that was one of the things that was super compelling. something that was also evidence of the paradigm shift. I mean, we had that last season with Greg Story, right? We had that episode where he talked about that report he had access to and how the agency model, as it has been in the past, is sort of, I'll just say weird. I don't want to say anything like directly derogatory, but just the past agency model is weird because not only are you selling advertising and making advertising, but you're also sort of convincing whoever is purchasing these things from you that it is absolutely crucial to their business, and without it, they won't survive. But the thing is, back before we had like advertising that was a lot more digital, you know, advertising was definitely TV and billboards and whatever. But how do you quantify that? How do you quantify how many people, you know, see this billboard and how that, you know, what's the click-through rate on a billboard? You know, what's the CTR? What's the ROI for a billboard? I mean, people throw stuff out there, but man, I think it's just, has been for years largely bullshit. And I think that companies are getting smart enough now to see that because we have analytics now. We have, you know, exactly how much a user costs to get when you're advertising digitally. Mm-hmm. So basically what that boils down to is this paradigm shift that I'm talking about, that is the digital nation, right? Is now, well, it's, I guess it's digital, but I mean the advertising nation is, I guess what I should refer to is the agency model and nation, and like how that's changing, and like we as designers that make up all these agencies, what does this mean for us? So agencies in the past sort of had been making and selling this advertising and saying that it's worked. But now that we've got a good 10 years under our belts as, you know, modern people that have digital products, and you could see what the real return rate is on that. Like, I think these things are being called into question. In fact, in the article, he lists that Pepsi had fired their agency of record and linked to a TechCrunch article or something about that, where basically they're like, look, we just can't justify this anymore. Like, this agency of record, which apparently I didn't know exactly what that meant until the article explained it. I'm sure you did, Anthony. But apparently what that means is that they basically have the right to purchase, you know, airtime and purchase sponsor spots and whatnot in the name of, you know, if you're agency of rec for Pepsi, you could buy advertising for Pepsi. So they let them go. And that's, you know, that's a huge, huge deal. So you, I think you and your career, you've kind of got a front row seat to see what the agency of the past has been. And over the last, you know, since, you know, I think 2007 because I think iPhone, but that's definitely debatable. But what have you seen in like working at New York agencies in like, you know, the early 2000s and what is going on now?
I guess for me, I mean, what's coming to mind most and hearing you talk through that is brought back some memories. I do remember working for a very large ad agency. And there was an interactive, I remember at the time, this must have been 2004, if I remember, 2005. There was an interactive discipline inside of this agency. And, you know, like other agencies, we had agency of record. And it was, I remember it being about the ideas we were selling to people, right? We were selling them ideas for the, you know, for radio spots or for TV spots or for digital marketing. And in the execution of these ideas, like if it did have like a website or a web app or an interactive experience behind it, it was definitely an afterthought because mm-hmm. the idea led, and then the actual development of the product was done with an outside vendor a lot of the time. Hmm. And I guess I bring that up because I wonder if a lot of these agencies are losing their value because they're only bringing one thing to the table. They're only bringing an idea versus execution. I don't know. Just a thought. But yeah, I mean, what I've seen lately, well, my novice brain, when we started this company, I think we thought, oh yeah, we're going to build apps. That's what we want to do. But as we've started to work with a lot of companies that are hoping that we'll bring this new product to market, I'm seeing all this other stuff that they need or that they really truly need. They may not be asking for it, but it's mainly about building this product and getting to market, but it's also about helping them find the product market fit and helping them market that and get it in front of the people that would sign up for it and maybe even optimize for conversion and, you know, some of the marketing things that go around it. That reading this article, for those of you that haven't read it, I guess kind of transitioning into one of the thoughts that really stood out to me was that they're predicting in this article, they're predicting the future. So they're looking at what's sort of happened in the past and where they predict things are going in the future. I do really respect what these guys have to say because their company has existed for a very long time. And they're navigating it pretty smartly, in my opinion. But one of the takeaways was that it doesn't matter what industry vertical that you're in. If you're only exploiting one service, you don't really have what it takes to build the true trust in the client that you can help solve the whole problem. If you're an advertising agency that can only come up with the idea, you're probably not able to build the product, and you're most definitely not suited for getting it to market and doing user research. And if you're a development company, then maybe you're missing design or maybe you're missing marketing. And if you're a design-only company, maybe you're missing the marketing and maybe you're missing the development. And so one of the things that I don't know if this is what he actually meant, but one of the things that this article made me feel was that to get the kind of digital product work that I imagined in my head I would want to do in the future, it requires being able to prove that you can help a client navigate all of the parts necessary to get that product to market and potentially even support it long term. Otherwise, they're dealing with multiple vendors and they're probably going to go purchase services from people that can.
Or what a lot of these product companies are doing, even startups, is hiring their own team internally. Right. Yeah. And that's an interesting angle too, because A, it's hard to hire people to work for your product, for your startup, and B, you're going to have just really potentially limited experience with that particular team. Whereas hiring this is definitely, some people would definitely argue this, and I understand why, but this is just what I think. Hiring an agency is A, to bring your product to market is A, a temporary expense. because you're trying to get to a certain point. B, you're working with people that have done this before and have built successful products, and they can prove it, you know. And I don't know, maybe there's a C in there, but those are the two things that I kind of think of.
I think the C is maybe the hybrid that we see a lot, like companies that have some expertise mm-hmm. internally that they pair with us. They're actually strong contributors, but they either don't have enough independent contributors or they just need an outside perspective.
Or they do. Yeah, they have enough, but they are like, let's put some money into an agency that understands like modern digital product design and see if we really want to build what we think we're going to build. Let's open up the possibilities on what this thing could be. And I feel like that is pretty much what most of, at least the clients at Fundsize, tend to be doing.
And boy, has that changed. I mean, I know you'll remember this too, but remember until recent years, the agency or the freelancer, whoever was hired to do the job would go through the motions, go through the process, phase one, discovery, phase two, whatever, mm-hmm. Wireframes. And then you'd present this thing to the client and you'd be like, here is this app that you've contracted me to build. Like, what changes would you like? And now that's, yeah. you know, that I haven't seen that like happen yeah. in a while. It's, you're building it with them.
You're building it together.
So they're looking, right. also people are looking to hire freelancers, employees, agencies that are willing to go through that process together, rather than just be presented with something and then have to, you know, make decisions on the spot that steer it. Maybe.
Dude, this article is fucking long. Yeah. You got to be ready. You got to put your big boy pants on to read this article. It's really long. It's thoroughly entertaining all the way through. It's kind of like a mini book. In fact, it is actually separated in chapters.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was just scrolling through and trying to find something that is a quote that's very relevant. This is a quote in the article by a guy named Dan Ariely. Dan Ariely, let's call it that. Digital product is like teenage sex. Everyone talks about it. Not many know how to do it. Everyone thinks everyone else is doing it. So everyone claims that they're doing it. Sort of.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of
like everyone putting UX designer on their profile.
Yeah. Lean UX, agile UX, agile design UX. Oh, God. I think it's funny because, you know, I hear other product design podcasts that talk about just like titles all the time because nobody can figure them out. And I feel like that quote is sort of like what it is. Like, none of us know like exactly how to describe what we do because we do a little bit of everything and then that doesn't sound good. So then we want to sound like experts, you know? So yeah, it's the reason I believe that nobody really understands it is because it's such a volatile change that we're going through as an industry right now. The way products are being built right now has never been the case. Like, people have never made money off of something that you cannot actually touch or feel. It's all like thoughts and content that's coming from other people, and people are interacting with it and paying either through advertising or subscription or whatever. But that has just never been the case. And so there's all of us designers that are designing these digital experiences because we're used to them, because we've understood sort of like do's and don'ts about that. And we're drawing our own conclusions, and we kind of all, you know, we just have to keep sharing, I think. Writing articles, reading about it, you know, commenting back and forth, excuse me, and having like a conversation together. But the whole thing about who does it best or who does it the way it should be done, like, that's definitely, I think, bullshit. I think we are doing what we think is right, but this time next year, we're going to be doing a lot of different things than we do right now. And that's because we are in a changing industry. Like, it's different today than it was before. And it's just, nobody has time to officiate titles or anything like that. Everybody just needs to like get the product out the door and like, let's try and build this thing and see if we can make money, see if we can build a product, see if this thing's going to float. So I kind of think that is what resonates with me with that quote. Like, everybody thinks that they're doing it. Everybody thinks everyone else is doing it. So they're like, yeah, we're doing it too.
Yeah. I mean, on that point, on a different topic, I suffer from the same issue. Like, another big thing in this article, Jules goes into what he sees as the future of the digital product studio. And he describes it as being three pillars. One, agency client services. Two, building own product. And three, investing in your clients.
So if I could just clarify the second two, like, the second one was building your own products, like as an agency, like, yeah, building your own product, like just dream. Okay. And then the third one is investing in your clients, yeah, meaning actually putting money into, yeah, their product, or.
Yeah. And if it was anyone else writing this article, I probably would have glossed over this, but here's why I took it seriously. Us two built Monument Valley and made millions of dollars. Us two also invest money, actual money, actual cash. Not just design for equity, but actual cash into their customers. Several of them. Like, one of them is Marvel, right? And this is sort of, it has to be some sort of proof that might lend us to imagine what customers are wanting, right? They want a long-term partner that can build with them, but they need skin in the game. Like, they want to hire an agency, but, you know, they want that agency to actually invest in it so that it can be a long-term thing to actually build and support and test and make it better over and over again instead of just being a one-off project. And it's also maybe shedding light on, well, maybe revenue is a little bit different for agencies now, so agencies are having to think of other ways to build that revenue. Maybe that's own product. I don't know. The own product one is something that I'm not sure of, but I suffer from what I suffer from that everyone else is doing it is this whole ventures thing. I see it happening all the time with companies like us too. And in the article, they go on a detailed list of all the agencies that have created a ventures arm or a completely separate business just to invest in companies. And these aren't just small companies, like Frog's doing it, RGA's doing it. There's got to be a reason why, right? And I would have to predict it's because that's what the customer is asking for.
Well, I mean, I think that when, you know, once a company starts becoming successful, it's well known and it's large and it's growing and it's maintaining that, you know, what do you do when you get a lot of money? What do? You invest it. So what better to invest in than the thing that you've seen the details, you've sort of lifted, you know, up underneath the curtain, and you know how the whole thing works. And if you believe in it, like, that's actually like a beautiful way to, you know, what better compliment can you pay your client than to actually give money to, yeah, to you know, put fuel in the fire?
And then for your other customers that are just typical customers, like you said earlier, Rick, you can prove that you know how to do that.
Right.
You know how to navigate that space. You know when design needs to be injected and when it should cost money and how much it should cost and when people should put skin in the game and how to build the products, how to market it, how to attract the audience, how to make it better over time and how to be a long-term partner. What a better way to do that. I mean, I don't know. It was mind-blowing for me because, well, you know, the other part that's a little bit more boring is that they actually go into detail and describe, like, how much money you actually have in the bank to do this. But it made me think, well, you know, because we've been trying to get our solution for this figured out because not the majority, but a lot of the more interesting customers that come to FundSize are looking for a partner to put some skin in the game. And we just haven't been able to crack the nut on it. And I don't want to get off on a tangent there, but.
Well, I mean, we're still a young company, man. Trying to find something that was basically like a list over the past, I think it's like 3 years or so, of agencies that had been acquired by, I think, mostly consulting companies. It's kind of crazy. I mean, there's been a couple over here that have hit a little close to home, right? Obviously, everyone knows about Tihan Lax being, you know, it wasn't an acquisition. They dissolved it or whatever that scenario was. But then, let's see. Fjord, where Natalie used to work, was acquired by Accenture.
They also took Chaotic Moon.
And then our own, Austin's own Chaotic Moon was also acquired by Accenture.
That's another example of a company like Accenture that has like IT solutions, realizing that they need to help their customers with the full service. Their customers also need design and development.
Yep.
Yeah. And you know, I was actually meeting, I had beers with Peter Merholz a week or two ago, and he lives in San Francisco, and he was telling me some stories about how hard it is to even run an agency in California.
Really?
Because of the talent, right? Well, the talent issue is one, right? The bigger companies are eating them up. But if you, and then the other challenge is if you actually have the talent, you know, you're being, you know, the it's too hard. Well, there's a lot of other things, the costs and all that, but you're constantly, these companies are constantly bombarded with, you know, offers to be acquired. I mean, right now as we speak, I don't know if I can think of two or three small, strong product design studios that have not been bought. Like, I just don't know what the, how long you stay in business there, because you probably go a different direction. I don't know. Maybe not too valuable for this conversation, but.
No, I think that is the conversation, sort of. It's like, what is the future of the product design agency? Because that's what we're in, and that's what we talk about. And the past has been like the advertising agency, and the present is the product design agency. Yeah. So,
and that was a trend that's repeated itself. Only, you know, when was it? What was it? What year was that? You know, back when all these companies like Razorfish and all these companies were being acquired, they were digital, like mostly like advertising agencies and digital marketing companies that were being acquired by the bigger conglomerates. Mm. I don't know if that's still happening. Now it's the product design studios that are going through that transition of being merged and acquired. And
yeah, to your friend's point, who's your friend that we had lunch with the other day? He's like the owner of the digital product summit, or the
Carl
owner
Smith.
Summit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. His point was that was sort of like a huge trend that was happening very, very quickly. And you're hearing it like every month you heard about like at least two new ones, but actually it hasn't, you haven't heard of any like over the past like 6 months or so. So I wonder if that is already subsiding or not, but I don't know. It's interesting. Kind of where we are today, I don't know. I like the idea of building, you know, your own products. I think it's an interesting question that you pose about whether you need to offer a full service or not. Because, I mean, there's always going to be a client that has, you know, certain needs.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, and honestly, this thing, you know, we've talked on a couple of episodes about this, and we've had all these other conversations internally about, you know, being very open about it on the podcast, like should we do development? And I think this article was the turning point for me that it was that the answer seemed 1,000% crystal clear. Yes.
Right? Well, as much as I want that, I'll play devil's advocate for you, right? Because what do you say about like right now, like when we're done with a project, we're sort of done with a project, you know? We give them the design files, and that's sort of the end of our responsibility. It's not like we don't talk to them anymore, but we're not really on the hook for anything after that. So how do you feel about, you know, if we're building an app for somebody, are we responsible for keeping it running? Like, is that like good, a good way to do it?
That's a very good question. I don't know, but I know that I feel like we at least need to, like maybe you've said it better, at least have deep enough understanding of what the client's going to be going through once they get that handoff to help them navigate it, right? It may not be actual development, but it might be, you know, staff members that know engineering that can help make design decisions from an engineering perspective. I don't know.
I think that's what Ben said they do at Rally anyway.
And so, also on the same topic, I think marketing, right? Because if it's true that, you know, and I think it is, about 25% of our annual customers are brand new companies, services, or products, and they want us to help them launch them, we should understand the marketing part of it. Mm-hmm. if we really want to help them be successful. Like, we should be able to not only design them a marketing page, but understand how to monitor and adjust for the conversion. And, you know, so that we can actually get the download, so that we can continue the relationship to that client. I don't know. It's
time to hire a CMO.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Steven's company, Steven Ray's company, he's the chief creative officer for a company called Dialexa. And they're an example of a product design agency that's doing that. Like, part of their standard engagement services is, you know, when they launch a product, say an iPhone app, they'll also do the marketing. And part of what they do is they actually run tests on that design, and they'll do optimizations on it. Not forever support, but for a duration. I thought that was pretty interesting that they'd actually do that.
So they have a support retainer or something?
I'm not sure. I think they have a division of their company that supports product design with some of the marketing stuff, like what kind of language about a feature actually helps, you know, attract the user, create the conversion, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, marketing's crazy, man. But I mean, that's actually kind of back to the point too, that like you can track it now. Like, you can actually track marketing now.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I'm sure they had metrics back in the day, but I think the fact that they are largely, they're just not very accurate.
They would be like those codes on the direct mailers.
What?
You know, like you get a direct mail mm-hmm. piece from like Best Buy and you'd put in like the 4-digit code. Yeah. And
use this code to save 10%.
Yeah. Everyone should read this article. Everyone should take an hour or two and actually read this, because I think it's wildly inspirational, and I think it relates to anyone that is running a business, or even if that business is just a freelance business.
Yeah, I think it's kind of, you know, the first two sections are sort of painting a picture, and that is from the industry's perspective, well, from, you know, the advertising perspective, then from the agency perspective, and then it sort of turns a corner and looks at what is a product design studio of the future look like. Yeah. So yeah. It's kind of a nice look back and ahead kind of format. But
we'll post a link on the show notes, and you guys should check that out and holler at Jules and thank him for taking the time to write that.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, we're going to go ahead and wrap up. So thanks a lot for listening in, everybody. And we'll catch you next time.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks so much for listening today. This is Rick. I'm sure you've all heard of Envision. The product is practically synonymous with screen design. We're stoked that Envision is now a sponsor of Hustle. Something we love about Envision is that they are so highly involved in the community. These guys really care about where design is going, and they support creatives with loads of design resources, UI kits, design process, and interview articles on their blog, which is great for just general inspiration when building products. Aside from being a great prototyping tool, they also have features for project management, creating mood boards and presentations, live collaborative screen sharings, and like a million other useful things. I literally do not have enough time to even list all their features, but they pretty much got what you need. Bottom line, they don't just want you to be a user. They want to empower you with their tools so that you can do your best work. And I think that's pretty cool. Overall takeaway, if you haven't heard about Envision or haven't checked them out in a while, just play around with their latest features. They have a free trial and a really impressive lineup of industry-leading design and project management tools. Their homepage is just envisionapp.com. Go check them out. Hustle is brought to you by Funsize, a digital product design agency in Austin, Texas, that creates delightful, innovative products for mobile, web, and beyond. Visit us on Twitter @Funsize, or visit our website at funsize.co.